This is the Friday, August 19th, 2016 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Elaine Cubb. Elaine, welcome back.
Good to be here.
We've got a lot of great questions to ask you from our followers, both on Facebook and on Twitter. So I want to start off just at the top of the list. We're going to work our way down. Give us your best answer.
Okay.
From Doyle in Alma, Arkansas, Doyle wants to know, will we see corn prices a little higher than what they've already been since June of this year?
I don't think so. I think the general trend between now and the end of the year, so going through a 15 billion bushel harvest, will be a downward trend in prices.
Let's say, as future WASD reports come out, they do start to trim that yield expectation.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They trim that total production number down. At this point, would that be bullish, or has the trade already priced that in?
It would be somewhat bullish. I think, yes, the trade is expecting to see that number trimmed. It would still be bullish to have that confirmed. So you could have a bounce from that. You could continue to have some higher support from investment money that we talked about in the show. So these things could support prices a little bit between here and December. But are we going to retest June numbers? I don't think so.
That 450 is not in the cards.
Not that I think that would be extraordinary. It would be fantastic.
It would be, unless you're feeding cattle or hogs or an
engine. Yeah, get your feed costs locked in. Yep.
And so that's the next part of that question. As we look at this bean meal market that has broken a little bit or at least stayed relatively stable, corn market down here on these concerns of 15 billion bushel corn crop, are you locking in feed costs right here?
I think that's a really good idea. And we talked a little bit when the cameras weren't on about the soybean meal idea. I read, and I don't have a lot of details about this, but I read that some soybean meal crushers in Brazil are shutting down because of their currency problems or whatever. And so, you know, I don't know, pie in the sky. Maybe we'd be exporting soybean meal to Brazil someday. That would be fantastic. But there are certainly reasons to continue to be worried about to think that these are nice low prices to get your feed costs locked in.
Okay. You're not willing to wait until the combines start to roll to see if we put in an even lower harvest low?
I think you can wait to lock in a flat price with the basis, but these futures values, it might be good to lock in the futures values and then potentially see that gut slot pressure on the basis.
Okay. From Fran the Man on Twitter, Fran is wondering, he's hearing a lot of reports of tip back on corn. How much do you think that will affect final yield? And do you think we will still hit trend line yield? So bringing it all the way back close to that 168 and change.
Well, 175 is pretty extreme.
Yes.
I agree with that. But these tip back, the tip back anecdotes do not concern me at all. Even on a, if you show me one ear with some tip back, nice tip back on it in a field, that field might have been planted at 50,000 population. You know, you don't, that could still be a record setting yield from that field, even with tip back. Tip back is good. It's showing that you're reaching the limit of what that field
utilizing
can do.
Everything in the dirt.
So even if everywhere in America had tip back, I would still not automatically think that that was a threat to yield. I'm not worried about that.
Okay. From Marty in Buxton, North Dakota. He's on Twitter at SatMonster. Marty remembers back in, I think it was May, we had you on Market to Market, and then you posted a chart on Twitter. You said June 18th was going to be the top of this December corn market, and you called it, Elaine Cubb.
I
believe on the day of that peak, you called it. So now Marty wants to know, what is your calculated highest probability of a December corn high chart? Let's talk about what's the highest probability from here until December. What's our next best time to sell?
That was it. It's past.
What's it look like for 2017?
Well, assuming that we'd have normal weather and have another normally abundant crop in 2017, then again, you'd be looking at sometime in mid-June. And I'll be honest and say that this year, June 18th was a Saturday.
Okay.
So it was actually June 17th. But anyway, no, Marty's, and I appreciate that he points that out because I feel pretty good about this year that the statistics just happened to work out correctly, that was the highest chance. But going forward, so let's say we missed that highest peak in June, between now and December, you know, the expectation is for prices to erode through the harvest. You do see some highs in March, so if you hold on to it, if you can store it, there is carry in the market suggesting that it makes sense to store it. You could try and store your harvested grain until March, maybe.
Given the probability of a perhaps trendline or higher yield, storage is going to get to be a concern for a lot of the parts of the Corn Belt. As producers are looking at making some sales. Maybe they're undersold what they're going to be producing. How should they be approaching a potentially saturated cash market come harvest time? What are your thoughts on basis? Is it going to pay to store? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that the industry as a whole has really developed a lot better capability to handle large amounts of grain, and it's from the grain bags and the covered bunkers. You know, we have learned, I feel, as an industry, not to just rely on concrete and steel, right? Like, we have learned how to keep grain in condition out in the middle of nowhere. So that's great. So that has expanded our ability, and it takes a lot of the pressure off of basis when you get into a huge harvest scenario. And also, another reason, you know, you worry about a repeat of a 2013 or a 2014 situation when the grain couldn't get on the trains, especially up in the Dakotas. We really had some terrible basis, just fell apart a dollar or more because there was no space to get it moved to. I don't think that's going to be repeated in 2016, knock on wood, but because there's not as much coal moving around. Coal is the number one mover on the railroads, and right now natural gas prices are so cheap that the electrical power plants are using natural gas rather than coal. Grain trains should be able to move just fine. So I think, you know, we'll see normal basis pressure at harvest, but hopefully not a disaster.
You know, you talk about the trains. They've also added a lot of capacity in hauling over the past couple of years. I was speaking to a producer, and there was a large national rail company had tracks near his house, and they had 12 miles of engines lined up one after another because the coal market was down so far. Those trains were just resting, ready to be pressed into service.
Fantastic.
With a massive crop.
And I think the staff, too, they've taken some folks off of furlough again, so I think they're ready to go for the grain harvest.
Okay. Yeah. The next couple questions we have for you are very big picture. We appreciate your analytical mind, Elaine. We want your thoughts here. Aurea, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that, in Dayton, Ohio, wants to know, what is the goal of USDA's August crop production report when there is at least 6 weeks of weather left prior to harvest? Why, Elaine?
Well, they put out monthly reports, and this is survey-based. They go out into their crop plots, and they have the most extensive database of data that they can use to draw on, say, look at conditions right now, all of their crop conditions rating, weekly conditions. They can use all of this to model what they expect the crop to look like. You know, that's the best you can do.
How accurate are the August reports compared to the January final report historically? Are they fairly close? Do we see a correction?
There's usually a correction. Things change. Like, a weatherman will give you a report for 7 days down the road, and then 7 days later something will change. So that's fine. I mean, you would hope that it would not be exactly correct. But this is the best knowledge or the best prediction that can be made at this point. And it will be, you know, confirmed or denied, or sort of we'll get another look at it this upcoming week with the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. If we see them also expecting to, given their mechanism for predicting yields, if they're also predicting a very large increase in yields from last year, I think that will confirm USDA's ideas.
If they confirm USDA's ideas, what's the downside potential to corn on a 173-175 confirmed via plot tests and everything else yield?
Oh, I don't know that the market will ignore the USDA saying the 15 billion bushels, but all of a sudden agree with pro farmers saying 15 billion bushels.
Well, it's confirmation bias of a sort. We've got two people now have come out and said, oh, that's a huge crop.
It is probably going to be a huge
$3.
Crop. Whether it's going to be that huge, I don't
gotcha.
You know.
We'll have to wait for the combines to really.
Okay. I think so.
Final two questions for you. First one is from Alyssa on Twitter, at Farmer Alyssa. She wants to know, again, talking to the USDA, how are ending stocks calculated and what are the limitations of that?
Ending stocks just have to be put into context. So how are they calculated? Very basic, right? You have the production plus imports, which is negligible for most U.S. grains, plus the previous year's stocks gives you, for corn, let's say 16 point something billion bushels of total supply, right? Minus what you use. So ethanol gets used, feed and residual gets used, help
exports.
Me out here, exports, seed,
food and industrial use.
Yeah,
and
so all of these things, you get a total use of 14.5 billion bushels. So what you have left over is the 2.4 billion bushels. That's your ending stocks number. Is 2.4 billion bushels a lot? I mean, here's a riddle for you, right? When is 1.1 billion bushels bigger than 2.4 billion bushels?
I don't know, Elaine Cubb.
So the wheat ending stocks are 1.1 billion bushels, but that's 47% of the total usage, right? It's basically half a year's worth of wheat just sitting in storage, whereas corn's 2.4 billion bushels is only 16% stocks to use ratio, right? So also in context, we're accustomed to having very large wheat inventories, and we're accustomed to having 12, 13, 15% corn inventories. So it is really context dependent of what the industry is used to storing and used to holding. But that's how it's done, to answer her question.
And the limitations are both supply and demand are basically just estimations of basically based on prior years' use and or imports and or production.
Yeah.
And now you jumped ahead on me, Elaine Cubb. You are really striding forward. Ask the analyst question, where we asked you to define certain terms and phrases used in the futures business, is how are ending stocks calculated and what are the limitations there? So as you mentioned, they're calculated, they're finding that ratio.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about the limitations. When have we been surprised by ending stocks that didn't quite materialize, or stocks to use ratios, rather, that didn't quite materialize?
Well, there's also some limitations, like particularly in the soybean market. You know, when there is effectively zero soybeans left in the universe, and yet their table still shows 100 million bushels. I mean, like you said, these are just, you know, these are just economic numbers on a table at the end of the day. Like, and furthermore, another limitation to it is no matter what it looks like, I mean, it gives you a really broad overview for sort of the supply and demand picture for a year's worth of this crop, but it doesn't tell you from day to day what the mood of the market will be, or what is really moving the markets from one day to the next.
Now, there's a saying, or at least something talked about on Twitter, if nowhere else, USDA always underestimates soybean demand.
Hmm.
Fairly accurate?
I don't know about that. It probably just feels like it, because we've had a series of years where globally this demand for protein is we're not keeping up with the growth of producing it. So I think it just feels like that.
Okay, a little selective memory, perhaps.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Elaine Cubb, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and answer our questions.
It has been a pleasure.
Thanks to all of you for sending in your questions via Facebook and Twitter. And before we go, we'd like to remind you that prices for a web-only sale of market-to-market gear have been slashed. Market-to-market's getting crazy, Elaine. We've got great deals. And if you're already on our webpage, search for the story about Everything Must Go. Inside there, you'll find a link to the iptv.org/warehouse sale. And once you click through, you'll find a list of one-of-a-kind mugs, die-cast tractors. Now, those are moving fast, so get in there. And Carhartt jackets, and a lot of these are covered with the vintage market-to-market logo. Or if you're interested in new gear, you can follow the links to show your support for the program that brings you news and market analysis you trust. Your contribution for any of these items helps keep this program going. Remember, once they're gone, they're gone. Thanks for watching, and have a great week.